Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Tuesday, November 14th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning into the Eastman Financial. Really appreciate your viewership, and we're happy to be able to bring you this program on WVW-TV, which is a great network of very, very stimulating thought and discussion. And we're very happy that you're joining us for not only this program, but for all of our great programming as well. As you know, WVW-TV is not a commercial broadcast network. We don't sell advertising, and our content is not in any way, shape, or form driven by advertisers or advertising. We are purely bringing you very, very detailed and interesting thought. And our ministry and our mission here is supported by viewers like you who not only are able to watch this programming 24 hours a day at no charge, there's no paywall, there's no subscription. You just click on our link and or our website, and you can watch some really great programming, not only live, but in the middle of the night, you can watch all sorts of recorded programming that has occurred earlier in the day and earlier in the week. So thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. As you know, we are a sponsored network, and that means that while we don't sell commercial advertising, we do have some companies and individuals who are very, very generous and help us keep the lights on and the information flowing. And if you've been watching my show for any length of time, you'll know that my sponsor is Swiss America Trading, which is a great American company based in Arizona, and they make a market in tangible precious metals. Of course, tangible metals means, you know, tangible means you can touch them. You can actually own and touch and hold and hide gold and silver and platinum. And if you're looking for a vendor in that space and you're interested in expanding your holdings of precious metals in various and sundry forms, or thinking about perhaps diversifying your financial holdings into precious metals, give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271. Tell them Dan Eastman suggested you give them a call, and they'd be happy to send you all sorts of free information that explains the world of owning tangible precious metals. You can also go to their website, which is SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they will be happy to send you free information, and they'll be able, and you will be able to purchase tangible precious metals of the kind, size, shape, and like that you're interested in. They deal primarily in bullion coins, which are coins manufactured or minted by governments around the world. The United States mints coins, and so do the Canadians and the Austrians and the Australians and the Chinese and the Mexican government. And basically what has happened is that you can take precious metals like gold, silver, or platinum, and the governments mint them into a size and shape. It's a coin. And effectively, you will want to buy coins minted by governments because you know that they are of the right purity and quality. So if you buy a 1 ounce gold coin, you'd kind of expect to have 1 ounce of gold in the coin. And that's what you see. Now, you see that on the screen. These are the bullion coins. And of course, these are American minted coins. And there's a law, actually, that says that these coins have to be minted from gold and silver and platinum that is mined right here in the United States. So if you want to take American gold and have it minted into a tangible precious metal asset that you can hide away in your sock drawer and protect yourself from inflation, this is how you go about doing it. So if you're interested at all, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. And importantly, they are running a great special right now. You see the coin in the middle on the screen? That's a Liberty Standing half dollar, okay? They come in a 1 ounce size and come in a half dollar. And they are offering these half dollar size for $13.50 each, and it includes shipping. So if you know anything about buying stuff online, heavy stuff, you ship it, it costs money, and that always adds to your cost. Well, right now, for $13.50 each, you can get a half dollar size coin. Now, you might want to, you know, get your ruler out and measure that and understand what that is. But that's a great deal, $13.50, including shipping. And, you know, we're entering into the gift-giving season, and you will probably be thinking, gee, I'll have to go shopping for gifts for my nieces and nephews and grandchildren and aunts and uncles, my crazy Uncle Mortimer. What do I get him every year? Well, these are great stocking stuffers and they're great gift ideas because you're giving something to somebody that is precious. And that's kind of an interesting thing. If you think back to the beginning of the Christmas holiday season, the birth of our Lord Jesus in Bethlehem, and then, of course, the three wise men show up, and what are they carrying? Well, one of them's got gold in his hands, precious metal. You give a gift of gold, it's a precious thing because basically, when you give a gift of precious metals to somebody, they don't just use it and it ends up in a landfill. I mean, nobody throws gold and silver in a landfill. So effectively, you're going to be able to give them something that's precious and long lasting. And, if inflation continues along, this is certainly a way to hedge against price increases as well. So, anyway, $13.50, including shipping, and it's a maximum of 250 coins. And the offer's only good until they run out. So, you don't want to delay until December 24th. You might want to get your order in early. But give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to their website, swissamerica.com. Use the promo code Eastman and go shopping. So anyway, let's move along to the news. Big news today, of course. We have been watching and anticipating with bated breath the consumer price index numbers that are released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And this is an important number because we've been watching inflation explode. Last year it was at 9%, and of course our Federal Reserve, the mechanism, our central bank mechanism, has been raising the interest rates, wiping out the real estate markets, causing a lot of pain in the economy. To bring the economy down, slow it down so that the interest rates, or the, excuse me, the inflation rate is closer to their 2% benchmark, which is part of their dual mandate. Full employment, 2% inflation, that would be utopia. Well, the numbers came out today and they shocked everyone. And it's kind of an interesting thing because if you listen to my report from yesterday and last week, we know that the University of Michigan has this really great study they do. They sample the person on the street, okay, and they ask them two questions basically. Well, they ask them a bunch of questions, but they derive two outputs. And of course, one is, how do you think the economy's doing? And most of the people are like, not so good. And then, what do you think inflation's going to be? And the perception, the public perception of inflation is that it's going to keep going because these are the people who actually shop and buy groceries and clothing, gasoline, and everything else. And they've been perceiving that we're on an uptick. Okay. Well, the numbers come out today from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And lo and behold, they are down. And they went from 3.8% to 3.2%. This is overall reported public inflation. So 3.8 to 3.2. So that's a 0.6% move, moving in the right direction. And that's what the Fed has been trying to do is cool the inflation rate. The core inflation rate, and we've discussed this in the past. You've got the headline of, which is now 3.2, and then the core, which takes out food and energy, is still roaring along at 4.0. That's down 0.1% from 4.1 the last time they reported. So what this shows us is that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is saying to the public, hey, inflation is moderating. Now we look at the University of Michigan study, and that people like us, we get asked the question. Nobody's ever called me from the University of Michigan. It'd be great if they would. I'd love to be, but they won't. They're going to call regular, people on the street that don't talk about this a lot. But the point is, there's a public perception that inflation remains a problem in the economy. And now comes the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And lo and behold, there's a big reduction in the inflation numbers as reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and which is a federal agency or part of a federal agency. Okay. So what does that mean? And we think about that. We say, well, that's good news. Inflation's coming down, and it is good news. We'd rather live in a low inflation economy. I think you need to have some inflation. It's like a little salt and pepper on your food. You can't be completely without. But at the end of the day, 3.2% is a good place to be. Now, what will this tell our dear friends at the Federal Open Market Committee and the Federal Reserve? These are the people who meet, you know, 12 of them get together and they have a long discussion and a fancy lunch, and then they come back and then they, you know, they the smoke comes up the chimney and they decide to whether they're raising the interest rates or not. Well, this kind of takes the wind out of the sails out of any more increases in the interest rate, because the Fed is trying to get back to 2%, and the administration, and keep in mind, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is part of the Biden administration, okay? It's part of the Trump administration. It's part of the Washington administration. Well, maybe not George Washington, but it goes back a ways. The point is that we're going into an election year in 2024, and the economic numbers have been all over the board, and people have a general sense, according to the University of Michigan, that perhaps the economy stinks, okay? And as a result of that, the question, you know, a lot of people who earn their livings and make their fortunes on Wall Street trading stocks and bonds will look at that number. And you can see it all over the internet if you're reading the news. You will, they're asking the question, is this just some sort of political thing, or is inflation really down to 3.2%? Or does anybody really know what the inflation rate is? But there's a signal going on. And what it's telling you is the Federal Reserve is not most likely, you know, where's my crystal ball here? There isn't one. But, you know, the theory being that the Fed is not going to raise the interest rates if inflation is coming down. And you can see that in the comments from the Federal Reserve presidents and the Federal Reserve in Dallas. I did notice one thing that the Federal Reserve of New York, the big one, okay, and the one that's got the permanent chair at the Federal Open Market Committee, they actually came out, the New York Fed Monthly Consumer Survey said, when they surveyed people, that inflation's coming down. Now, University of Michigan's surveying people, and they say inflation's going up. Which is it? So is the Fed coordinating with the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, to create an illusion or at least a perception that inflation is moderating so that they can stop cutting or raising interest rates? It's hard to say. But the problem we're facing, and this is another, you know, it's all tied together. These are not just little news bits and then, what goes in one ear and out the other. You got to really look at the matrix and the patterns. Because what are we facing today? Okay, well, we're facing today, this is the third time since I started talking in March, that the federal government is going to shut down when? 4 days from now, this Friday, and if the Congress doesn't pass some sort of stopgap continuing resolution, there's 12 of these things, then the federal government shuts down. Well, it's not going to shut down. It never shuts down. Something will happen. But at the end of the day, what is becoming very apparent with respect to the economy is that the federal debt is driving the markets, and in a very big way. It's changing the perceptions, and it's changing the cost of our government in a way that starts to begin to look like we're in some sort of a downward spinning vortex, which is not a good place for a government to be. So there's a lot of input going on. And when you start thinking about the Congress having to act between today, Tuesday, November 14th, and Friday, which is, you got Wednesday and you got Thursday and you have Friday and that's it, the rest of the day. This stuff is coordinated, and you have to begin to understand, what are you hearing when these news stories come out? Now, an earlier story that came out last week, which I don't know how I missed it, is a big story. Moody's downgraded the United States credit to a negative outlook. Now, if you remember back when I started this series back in March, I was talking about Fitch. There are three debt rating companies that are preeminent in the debt world, and it's not just government debt. It's all debt. Corporations that issue bonds, local governments issue bonds, counties issue bonds, states issue bonds. The federal government issues bonds. Great big companies issue bonds. Districts like the sewer district or the entertainment district. The bond market is vast, and it's been around a very, very long time. Go back to reading F. Scott Fitzgerald's famous novel, The Great Gatsby. What was Nick all about? He was a bond man or a bond salesman. He would jump on a train and go out into the hinterlands of the Midwest and pedal bonds for railroads and industries and all sorts of things. And he would sell these bonds to unsuspecting Midwestern farmers who got themselves burned big time. And that's why we ended up with blue sky laws that basically started to regulate the offer and sale of securities throughout the United States. But the point is, bond market's been around a long time. And as a result of the blowouts back in the 1920s, which led to the great, you know, the crash of Wall Street, it was the bond market first, okay? And then the Wall Street, you know, the stock market crashed in October 1929. And the regulations came in the 1930s, because it always takes Congress a very long time to clean up a mess. So by the 1933 and 34, we had the Securities Act, and which means you had to register securities, and Securities Exchange Act, which means if you're going to trade these things, the exchange has to be registered, and there has to be all sorts of listing standards. So you just don't go putting garbage out into the public and people buy it. Well, when that happened, along comes these bond rating agencies, okay? And they said, well, we're gonna look at the underlying numbers, because now we can, because bond offerings have to have a prospectus and they have to tell the truth under the 33 and 34 Act. That's the whole idea, full and fair disclosure of all material facts. And if you don't, the failure to do such a thing is a federal crime, okay, not to mention civil liability. So modern Wall Street emerges in the 1930s, and along with them are these bond rating companies, okay? And what they do is they look at the credit quality of the issuer, the municipality, the county, the state, the corporation, the federal government, and they rate bonds. And I'll say they give them a AAA rating. Now, they have a different metric. Each one has their own little proprietary code. You can use capital A's or small A's, whatever. But I'm just going to generalize and say AAA rating is the cream of the crop. The balance sheet, the income statement of those organizations are rock solid, and boy, their history is, you know, superb, and they're going to pay this money back. And they want a AAA rated bond. If you get a lower rating, like a double A, or a single A, or a B, or maybe a junk bond, the interest rate is higher to compensate for the added risk that there may be a possibility of default. Now, most of these bonds don't default, because that's a bad thing. Okay, nobody wants to go through one of those. But there are ratings that you want to have, and a AAA rating is an important thing. And of course, the federal government emerging from World War II certainly was a AAA rated credit. It was the strongest government in the world, man. We had taxpayer-based industries making, you know, cars and appliances and everything. We were the best, you know, top of the heap. And we were really the benchmark. So when you know, the three companies, you know, Moody's, Fitch, and Standard & Poor's, were the three big ones. And they all came up with their formulas. And of course, the benchmark was the United States government. I mean, nothing is more secure than putting your money in a federal bond for 10 years, knowing you're going to get it all back, okay? And of course, you always have inflation risk, and that's a problem. When you're a bondholder, the longer your bond, you know, you get the bond back in 10 years and your money buys half of what it bought when you bought the bond, you've lost, okay? So that's captured in. So there's inflation risk, and then there's economic return, and then, of course, there's the risk of default, and that default risk is a big thing, and that's how these bond houses have calculated since basically the 1930s when they started. So when you're out shopping for a bond, and if you're a pension fund or an insurance company or a bank or a, you know, or maybe an IRA or a 401k, or anytime there's a big pot of money and they got to go find a place to park it, well, a safe place is to park it in the bond market when you buy bonds that are AAA rated. And there are very few of these AAA rated bonds because, you know, most companies, you know, there's market risk, you know, that maybe the revenues disappear, or technology, you know, like the buggy whip companies, they all went away. And at the end of the day, this is what you do. If you want to grow up to be a Wall Street bond trader, you have to go to college and you get a degree in finance, maybe, and then you can waltz off and, you know, you'll learn all the formulas and methods. And then your job is to go pick the bonds with the highest ratings and, you know, and the biggest interest rate. And then hopefully you can beat the next guy and everybody will give you the money instead of him. That's the market. So bond ratings are critically important. So when we see Moody's and Standard & Poor's and Fitch, well, Fitch is downgraded and Standard & Poor's downgraded 10 years ago. They saw the handwriting on the wall with the United States government. They said, no, this is not AAA. It was over 10 years ago. Okay, Fitch was earlier this year. They finally threw in the towel 10 years later and said, hey, There's something wrong with the federal government. We got to downgrade this because there is now a risk, okay? And that's captured in the FISC number. Well, Moody's, and I think probably for political pressure, they're still at AAA, but they have a negative outlook, which is something you don't want. Yeah, you're still at AAA, but we think, you know, the future isn't looking so good for you. So what we've got now are all three of the biggest of the big saying that the, I hate to use the word gold standard, but, you know, the U.S. bond is the safest place on earth to park anything that resembles money, is now under pressure from all three of these rating agencies. And that's not a good place to be, because there are counties, there are states that have AAA ratings. Imagine your county having a higher rating on its debt than the United States government. It's something to think about. It's something you can call your congressional representative and say, hey, how is it, you know, as I'm standing here being solicited for contributions at your, you know, rubber chicken cocktail party here. Why is it that the federal government's debt is rated lower than my county at home? And just ask the question. They don't know what you're talking about, but it's the problem that we're facing. And that is a big story. I mean, and that's why I think another indicator that the Federal Reserve cannot be in a position with its monetary policy tool to continue to have to ratchet interest rates to try and slow inflation that's being driven by the fiscal policy of Congress. Now, yesterday, I pointed out this news bit about when you look at the rate of increase in federal debt sales, and that's where poor Secretary Janet Yellen, and she's out there selling bonds every day like crazy because she's got to get money to pay all the bills. And when you look at the rate of sales, instead of the $2 trillion projected deficit, which is insane, I mean, there aren't $2 trillion, it's more like $5 trillion. And when you start thinking about what $1 trillion is, I mean, nobody knows what that is. I told you, if I hand you a dollar bill every second, how long is it taking me to hand you $1 trillion? It's 56,830 some years. It's crazy. It's crazy money. You got to do that now. You got to do it 35 times. So the point is, I think what we're seeing is that the federal government is paying crazy money in interest payments on the outstanding debt. The velocity of debt is increasing. And we know that we're paying over $1 trillion a year in interest on the national debt. Well, let me tell you, $1 trillion a year would put a lot of, you know, food pantries and, you know, bridges and harbors. I mean, that if you think about tax the public and spend on public goods and services, $1 trillion in added goods and services would really make America an amazing place. I mean, I think, well, you know, people have made political hay out of this, but the point is, if we had that $1 trillion that we could spend on improving infrastructure or, you know, feeding the poor or whatever, you know, pick a cause of du jour, that's a lot of money. And as this interest continues to increase, you know, interest rates are continuing to bump up. And we know the Federal Reserve has lost its ability to increase interest rates through its monetary mechanism because effectively the markets themselves are demanding higher interest. And with the downgrade now by Moody's, at least, you know, the negative outlook, that puts us in a situation where interest rates are going up because there's more perceived risk. And the United States is part of a global market for debt. I mean, we're not, you know, the market doesn't exist within, you know, these 48 here or maybe even 50. Effectively, there's a global market. And when investors globally, you think about it, you got 1.5 billion people in China, 1.5 billion people in India. You know, there's a lot of people on the globe and they have economies too. And they're making money and their tax systems are different. And, you know, there's a lot of wealth growing on the rest of the globe. The United States has basically spent more than it can afford. And we're a country of 330 million people. We're not a country of 1.5 billion people. And at the end of the day, when you see that kind of number in debt and the debt service, now we're seeing the Federal Reserve is really hamstrung. If you raise that interest rate another quarter point, you're going from $1 trillion in debt service to, you know, pick a number, 1.3, 1.5, whatever, you know, because it averages out. There's a, you know, always constant refinancing of federal debt. And as you know, today's block comes due, they got to sell new bonds and they're not 2%. They're like 4.5, 4.75, whatever. It costs a lot more. So the longer this continues, the bigger that debt service number becomes. And that becomes a real problem. And I think that's what we're seeing. I mean, you were at a point where the political courage doesn't exist. And that's why we look at this, you know, the story today that they want to have the in Congress, they want these continuing resolutions. And, you know, what's being proposed is just pass something. Don't change anything. Just give us more time. And of course, the conservative caucus is saying, cut spending. Because, you know, they realize, man, we are, you know, when you're looking at a refinance rate of approaching $5 trillion in deficit in 1 year, it's out of control. I mean, running around, okay, we're going to save Ukraine. We're going to save this. We're going to save, you know, it's like any family in America. Every family in America would love to live in a 10,000 square foot mansion and have two Rolls Royces in their garage and their private airplane parked out back and go down to the harbor and there's your 80 foot yacht and, you know, travel the globe. Most people can't afford that, and they don't live like that because they know if you start buying stuff like that on modest income, you're going to go broke. You're going to lose it all, and you're going to end up in bankruptcy. So they don't. I mean, the rational mind says, you know what? We got to live within our means. Yeah, I'd love to have a, you know, a yacht and a mansion and a Rolls Royce. That'd be so much fun. But you don't pull that trigger because you know, unless maybe you're, you know, terminally ill, you think, hey, I'm going to shoot the moon here. You don't do it because that's crazy to live like that. And, you know, frankly, the banks aren't even going to lend you like that. Well, we all have, you know, a mechanism that says you got to live within your means, or at least if you're stretching, you got to have some confidence that you can basically pay it off someday. The government needs that same discipline, because municipal governments must have a balanced budget. County budgets must be balanced. State budgets must be balanced. And with a few odd exceptions of California and Illinois and their pension mess that everybody had to bail out during COVID, of course, you know, we have to live within our means. And I think this is a big problem. We have a federal government that thinks it can be all things to all people every day around the globe, and money's no object, because they know darn well when you sell those bonds into the market, there's going to be people buying them. You think, well, you know, who's the fool? Well, I don't know. Ask that question. You know, is it the Federal Reserve with quantitative easing? Are they shoveling money in? Quantitative tightening? Pull the money out? It remains to be seen, but we are not in a good direction. And I think prudent government requires us to live within our means. And with how much can 330 million people afford to pay in taxes to be the, you know, the ruler of the world? And the answer is you can't. Somebody with 1.5 billion population can be the ruler of the world because they can tax their people and spend money all over the globe. It's like the Chinese are doing with their Belt and Road Initiative, you know, incrementally, just like the British Empire, only instead of showing up with wooden boats and guns, they show up with a checkbook. And at the end of the day, the people in Congress are living way past their headlights, and we send them, you know, you got to think about that. You know, who we elected, and you know, is because what happens ultimately to we the people? I mean, who's going to get stuck with the bill? And of course, we don't know. But, you know, there is not a society on earth in the history of humankind that has been able to spend into oblivion and come out stronger and better. You know, there isn't. There just simply isn't. So it's something to think about. And I, you know, this is something to think about and ask your representatives, what's going on? Why are you doing this? Because, you know, well, okay, let's move on. I did want to mention two things that, you know, people don't think just because you're watching this obscure Eastman Financial Report on a small VW TV network that you're not getting current news. Because let me tell you, you are getting current news. There are two stories that I talked about that days later show up in major financial news. So I'm flattered. I'm very honored to be able to help in the media prep for my colleagues in the financial world, but the small town revival that I've been talking about is picking up steam, and I'm happy to see that. But when you think about how people are turning inward into their local villages, that's a very good thing. I'm very happy that, you know, it's not just me seeing that, but others are recognizing that small town America has a future, and I think that might be something for people to look at and consider. The other interesting story is talking about the power outages. I am a little bit concerned about that because I have spent 3 years of my career as a commissioner on the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. And not to brag, but the Wisconsin Public Service Commission is a national leader, thought leader in utilities regulation. Always has been. It was one of the first states to regulate such things as utilities. And we have a pretty good track record. And I'm seeing more stories in the media about the NARC which is it's the overseeing organization that deals with the Reliability Council and the reliability zones. They are warning that two-thirds of the United States could see blackouts if we get a really nasty winter going. And of course, that would mean that global warming would have to stop and global cooling would come in. But at the end of the day, it's an important thing to think about. You probably should be prepared. And what do you do? I mean, maybe if you live in Texas or Arizona, it's no big deal. But if you live north in Wisconsin like us, if the electricity goes out for 2 or 3 days in the dead of winter, you better be prepared because there will be deaths. And when you think about, Texas actually had that problem a couple of years ago. Man, it got cold and the power went out and people were freezing their pipes and it was bad. Anyway, we'll talk again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in and have a great afternoon. Bye.